So, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to talk about today really closely to me, how I actually practice, and particularly how I practice when I'm in an emergency. I sometimes call these spiritual emergencies, because when things are going fairly okay, I mean, there's always ups and downs, but fairly okay, I kind of ride on my life and my practice. But then something, this is, I think, common to all human beings, something happens that makes it an emergency situation. You get fired. You go to the doctor and it's not a good thing they tell you back. Someone dies. You go, something's wrong with your kids. You have to have surgery. You know, all these kind, a little bit more than usual. And when I hit those moments in my life, I have to change how I'm practicing. And also, I always say to my husband, oh, how do people get through this if they don't have a practice? How do women do childbirth if they don't have a practice? I was so grateful for my practice when I delivered my children, which is now quite a while ago, but I think, where is your anchor when you're going through a difficult situation? And for me, practice, and even you could let go of the dogmatic or even the scholarly parts of practice, and just that I've been practicing for all these years. It's like going to the gym. If you've been doing this for 40 years, this muscle is kind of strong. If I've been with my mind going like this, for 40 years, the muscle in my mind is stronger. So when I hit an emergency, or a big distraction, or something I feel I can't handle. I don't know. I'm sure quite a few of you have gone into an MRI machine. You're in there for like an hour because they take all different kinds of pictures. And when I first went in, my first reaction was, oh my God. I got very almost, not exactly panicky, but I really felt something that I thought I couldn't handle. And because I have been studying Buddhism for so long, I knew exactly what to do, which is, Judith, you should concentrate right now and let go of the external circumstance. And I went back, often when I'm in a spiritual emergency, I go back to my most basic instruction that I was given when I first came in the door. And one of them was to count my breath. So when I first went into this big machine, what do they call it? The waiting room has a big sign that says nuclear medicine. So already I thought, oh my gosh, where am I at? And they give you radioactive stuff. So even that, how do I take the experience I'm actually happening in? How do I take this in. Without my mind defending itself, fighting it, going to Hawaii, you know, not staying with what is actually happening. And what is actually happening is a very human thing. It's part of our human life. So I counted my breath. For the first 10-minute photography, I counted up to 60 breaths. But what I have to say is, it calmed me down. It really did. And then I didn't have to count my breath because I was in a different kind of place after doing it. And then I could go to a different type of practice for the rest of the time. I didn't have to go to the absolutely most basic, the one I don't even like, counting. You know, that's so, ugh. So what I'm trying to say is, our practice, see, sometimes I say in Dokusan, how's your practice going? And I would say maybe 70% of the time, people answer me, how are they meditating or not? And I feel like, oh, that's actually, you know, concentration is only 1/3 of the three bases of Buddhism. There's concentration, there's wisdom, understanding the teaching, and being able to discriminate what is wholesome and what is unwholesome, and then your ethical behavior. So when I ask, how's your practice going, where I'm at right now is I want you to answer from the whole triangle. I don't want an answer that's just, oh, I've been meditating 20 minutes a day for 5 days a week. That's fabulous. I'm so happy. Thank you. That's good for you. But it's not, I would like everyone's idea of what is practice to expand. Because practice includes, let's say you have a really good practice and you sit for an hour a day. Well, what about the, and then you sleep for 8 hours, so that's 9 hours. So what about the rest of the hours? Are you practicing? Are you remembering? Are you conscious of what's happening in the rest of the time? And to me, that's really great practice, if you can say, I've been working at not allowing fearful thoughts to go through my mind. That's a different way of answering what is your practice. And as I entered this period, I've been having health problems since February. I broke my shoulder, and now I have another problem that I'm dealing with this week. So all of this is up for me. How do you, nothing's life-threatening, don't worry about me, but for me personally, it's changed my practice. Everything, I feel like everything's been interrupted. I can't just do my regular life. How do I receive that interruption? How do I receive, I just can't do my regular life? So if I'm coming from a very self-centered Judith Regeer kind of way, I get really mad, you know, or this isn't acceptable, or, you know, I start being mean to my husband, maybe, you know, or somehow I'm only seeing what's happening to me through the eyes of self-centered myself. And I think because I've been practicing for a long time, I don't have to do that anymore. It's almost immediate that I think, okay, something just happened, and how am I going to practice with this? For example, I went to Colorado to go skiing, which is kind of the love, I love that. And on the last day of my trip, I had a very bad fall. And during the fall, I said, oh man, this is bad. And then I had to kind of sit for a while. And then I stood up, I said, oh man, this is bad. And I walked. I was with someone from the Sangha. And we kind of slowly walked over. There was a chairlift right near us, which was a good thing. And he went to get the ski patrol. And I could watch my mind start going. Like, oh, what's happened to me? Am I going to have surgery? How long is this going to take? Will I never ski again? I started to cry. Oh, I won't ever be able to ski. You know, I started going on. In the meantime, I was in quite a bit of pain. And my friend came back and said, Judith, what should I do? How can I help you? And immediately I said, we both have to guard our mind. So actually, that's my first, what do you do in an emergency? And I started practicing. Really, it wasn't 5 minutes after I got hurt. I realized, okay, I have to practice right now. Very important. If I'm going to get through this, I have to be practicing with my whole being. And the thing is, I had access to practicing because I practice when it's not an emergency. Because I sit zazen. I think one of the best practices for preparing for an emergency is sishin, which is our longer sitting, where you sit all day. Sometimes you sit for a week. We're going into one in June where you sit for a week. And sishin has really taught me how to receive the moment the way it is. It's really taught me how to live with discomfort. More than anything in my life, sishin practice has taught me how to be in the middle of a painful situation, physically or emotionally. And when you're sitting and pain arises, physically or emotionally, you have to figure out. First of all, if you've ever done sishin, the first day you do it, it's a total shock. Like, what? There must be something wrong, because this is too hard, you know? And then you realize, oh no, this is what it is. Very, very hard. Maybe your knee is hurting you and you don't move. Very hard. And what you have to do inside is say, what do I have to do with my mind? What do I have to do with my body to sit, to accept this moment? And I learned through sishin practice particularly, what do I have to do to soften my mind so it doesn't go into hysterics? What do I have to do with my body? Where should I place my mind? I really learned how to breathe, and that's called concentration practice or meditation. Learning how to stay with yourself, stay with the circumstance exactly the way it is, and be able to place your mind. And it needs to be exercised, practiced, before the emergency hits. I know this because sometimes people come in with an emergency and I tell them kind of what I'm going to try to tell you today if I have the time. And they get it. Intellectually, they get it. But they haven't been doing the mind. So their mind isn't strong enough to actually do it. Or their mindfulness, you know how we get distracted? Everybody knows that, right? Well, if you're not used to bringing your mind back, you just stay in the distraction. And when it's an emergency situation, the distraction is all this negative thinking and fear. And, you know, you could practically faint from all the what's going through your mind. So I deeply appreciate Zen practice when I find myself in an emergency. It's like, oh, thank God, I have something to do that is not just hysterical or self-centered or afraid of death, which is ultimately, right, what we're afraid of, that we're going to die. Even though the surgery I'm doing is, you know, it's kind of the kind they do all day long. It's not a big deal to the surgeon. I mean, he's just doing it, and then the next person comes in and he does the same thing, you know. But for the person, it's more scary. So how... So, for example, we do the five remembrances. Lately, the last few years, we've been doing the five remembrances during practice period every morning. So I had been saying in February, every morning, I am of the nature to grow old. There is no escaping growing old. I am of the nature to get sick. There is no escaping getting sick. I am of the nature to die. There is no escaping death. So on that mountaintop, I said to my friend, we have to guard our minds. And the first thing that came in, I am of the nature to get sick. There is no escaping getting sick. And just saying that calmed me down. It's like, okay, you're sick now. And there's no escaping getting sick. How am I going to be with getting sick? One thing I did, from the top of the mountain, they put you in a toboggan, do you know? And they wrap you all up like a cocoon. And it was snowing. That's partially why I had an accident. It was pretty heavy snowing. And I had my goggles on, and she said, oh, you better put your goggles on, because, you know, your life. So you're all, you know. Ugh. And she was a 25-year-old, 115-pound girl. And she was going to take me down in the canoe. That's what it felt like. And the minute I laid down, not me, but all my years started to happen. And I just started chanting. I chanted the English translation of Gate Gate Paragate, which is what I've been studying lately. I'll tell you it because it's so beautiful. Beyond thought, beyond personal identity, beyond concepts of time, awakened awareness beyond individual consciousness, ooh, ah, wow. So I'm in this little thing, and I just started chanting that over and over. Beyond thought, beyond this is happening to me personally. And it was just fabulous. It just... And then I chanted Avalokiteshvara, the little mantra, and Jizo mantra, which are things I've done a lot in my life, and they were right there for me. And the young woman who was fabulous, very competent, got me down the hill, and they were putting me in the, well, I guess they call it, it must have been an ambulance, but it wasn't an ambulance, it was a old junker truck with the back open, and they could just slide the toboggan in the back of the truck with your legs kind of sticking out, right? And then they had a few emergency things, you know, and they stayed with you, and my friend stayed with me, so it was just very funny. And then she said, "Wow, your chanting really helped me." A young woman. She could hear me chanting. And she said, "It just calmed me down." And I thought, oh, isn't that fun? You know? That was just a wonderful experience. And I have to say, I don't think that experience would have happened except that I'd been practicing. It was very close to the surface of my mind. What to do. I'll just say one other story. As long as I'm telling you the story about I broke my humerus and twisted a lot of stuff. But I'm sitting cross-legged, so it's really great. This is the first time I'm sitting cross-legged for a long time. You go into the emergency room at the ski resort, and they take x-rays. And I was sitting down, they were taking x-ray of my knee, and on the ceiling, like at the dentist, they have, "Consider this part of your alpine adventure." I thought, that's perfect. That's perfect. Okay, so what I wanted to tell you is what I do in an emergency. Is this all right? I hope, I don't know if this is helpful or not, but anyway, the first thing is guard your mind. And this, okay, so everything I'm telling you is something you should be doing in your life anyway. This is what practice is, but it gets heightened if you have an emergency. So for me, guarding my mind is, have you ever seen the statues of the ferocious guardians in Buddhism? Yeah. They're ferocious. And if you haven't seen it, you should Google a guardian, Buddhist guardian statue, and you'll find these ferocious statues. And they're usually at the gate of a temple. They protect the temple. Or if you've ever been to Kyoto, there's this fabulous temple where there's 1,001 golden Avalokiteshvara statues, full height, right? Beautiful, I see, maybe you've been there. And in the front, on the ground floor of this beautiful, it's the largest wooden building in the world, rows and rows and rows of golden Avalokiteshvaras. But right in the beginning, the first row, are 7 guardians guarding the Avalokiteshvara. So I imagine I put these guardians at the front. Sometimes this is just an image, this is not Dharma. I think of thought stream. The thought stream is going one ear and out the other ear. Just and I put a guardian at both ends, going into my mind and going out. The one at the beginning is very important. That guardian has to watch, is this thought going to help? is be helpful, or is this thought going to be harmful? And this is from a sutra. It's actually, I think it's called something like discriminating thoughts, where you decide, how is that thought going to affect the moment? And you only let in thoughts that are going to help, wholesome thoughts that are helping your stay stable, stay calm, stay open, non-defended, and receiving the moment as it is. All the other thoughts you don't take in. So at the top of the mountain, I knew I shouldn't think about, will I ever ski again? I'm going to have surgery. I just kept bringing my mind back to the moment, and the moment was a hard moment. It was snowing. I could barely stand, and I thought if I sat down, I wouldn't be able to get up. It took them a long time because it was Sunday afternoon and the hills are filled with people and accidents. And it was hard. But what I had learned from Sishin is how to stay with hard, how to stay with a painful situation and not let my mind wander. And that's what I kept doing. And that's guarding the mind. And I do this a lot because there are thoughts, even when I'm not in emergency, just my daily practice, there are thoughts I should not allow. And I don't. The reason I don't is because I've worked that muscle. My brain is strong. That's called jariki. That's the power of concentration. You work it. So that you can say, I don't want that, and I'm going to place my mind over here. And that's kind of a wonderful gift that comes out of learning to concentrate your mind. Oh, so I guess that's the first two, that I go back to my most simple thing, my most basic practice is stay in the present moment and don't think about the past or the future. And sometimes it's hard to stay in the present moment. We all know that, because we don't like pain, emotional or physical. However, that's the basis of Zen practice, is learning how to receive the moment no matter what side of the fence it's on. That's a very stable place. And I already talked about chanting. When I chant, usually I chant with a mala. This is not an emergency. I didn't have a mala at the top of the mountain, right? But because I had been chanting in my regular life, I knew the chants by heart. And sometimes I do it with my fingers. Now, one of the reasons I chant is when the situation is so anxiety-ridden that I can't keep my mind. I use a tool. I could say I cheat. But I don't think it's cheating. I think it's knowing. Like sometimes I am so anxious that I can't sit zazen. Has anyone experienced that? Where I am just beyond sitting on the zafu. Someone tells me you should sit on the zafu, I punch you in the nose, practically. I'm so out of my body, maybe even, you could say. In those circumstances, chanting is fantastic. Because it gives your mind something else to do. It replaces these terrible thoughts. It helps you concentrate. And really, my experience is if I do it for 10 or 15 minutes, I calm down. Then maybe I could go sit zazen if I wanted to. But chanting is what I do when I need to calm my anxiety or my fear. And the mala also, do you see how that stabilizes you? Like sometimes in Zazen, if I'm anxious and I'm overriding, it's like I can't pick up the 15-pound dumbbell. I can only do 5 pounds. So when it's 15 pounds, I ask someone, will you come help me, you know, practice with this? So you come help me is the mala or a chant and tonglen, but I'll get into tonglen. So the mala, even sometimes I do it with my breath, that I move a bead on my exhale. And it is a concrete stabilization of what I'm trying to do in Zazen when I'm not really, really anxious. So I have these backup tools that I use quite readily. A ghost just said, Zen doesn't do that. Right. So I talk a lot to that ghost. And I just say, I do what works. And I live in America in the 21st century. I can go on the internet and I can listen to a Zen lecture, a Tibetan lecture, and a Vipassana lecture right in a row. So I'm sorry, I can't be that narrow anymore. I have a lot of these tools and I use the tool that works for bringing me back to what is actually happening in my life, softening and opening my heart to be able to receive human life the way it is, and to have a reaction that is not just based on me, 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 and my, and mine. And I have to do that a lot because that's our natural reaction. So in order to have a different reaction, you have to practice. Okay, now I'm going to talk about Tonglen, which is a Tibetan teaching. Let's see, how are we doing for time? Pretty good. I started doing Tonglen in the 80s through Pema Chodron. And I was not at Clouds. It was during the period where I wasn't at Clouds. And we had a sitting group in Minneapolis where we studied Pema Chodron. And we were particularly studying how to do Tonglen and how to use the Lojong slogans. And I found that what I found from Zen practice is that there was a hole in Zen practice that I didn't know how to deal with, really. And especially because of the type of personality I am. I'm Jewish, from a Jewish background. I'm very emotional. Very emotional. I cry. I'm very psychological. I had a difficult history. I have a lot of pain from that history, on and on. I was an addict, on and on and on. So when I started doing Zen at a very early age, and I just did it. And Katagiri Roshi, a very fine teacher, was my teacher. But he was a Japanese conservative man, and he was doing, I wouldn't say he was doing classical Zen because he came to America because he wanted to get away from the hypocrisy of, you know, it's like any institution gets crusted over. So he came here and he taught without very much crust, but he was quite strict too. So, you know, I'd go in very, oh my God, sometimes I think about my doksans with him when I was in my 20s. You know, I'd just go in and I'd be crying and talking about my parents, and I was just all over the place, you know. And there was nothing really he could say back to me except just go and sit in the middle of what you're feeling. Sometimes he said, put all your emotions in a backpack and just wear it on your back. And I did that for a decade. I'm grateful. I learned a lot. I learned a lot from doing a lot of sesshin and just dealing with it by myself. But when I started to notice that Vipassana and Tibetans had teachings about the emotions, I thought, wouldn't it have been nice during that decade or two if someone had taught me loving kindness? That's what I should have been doing. Or at least that's what I would give my student to do if they were coming in Dogsan after Dogsan for years in pain. I would give them, now I have, because I went in searching, for what are emotional practices that are not psychological. It's not like going to a therapist, but it's directly working on the psychological pain or the physical pain that you might be having or other people in your life are having or the world is having. Very large suffering we're talking about. So anyway, I found Tonglen through Pema Chodron, and it really, I felt like Tonglen and Lojong just went right in that hole. And also Tonglen is done with the breath, so it was quite close to the Zazen practice I had been taught. Pretty close, but a little person saying, I'll help you lift that 20 pounds. Just a little help, right? Like a little dot. Someone helping you. So for those of you who don't know what Tonglen practice is, I'm just going to talk a little bit about it. It's hard practice, so I would suggest, and I'm hoping that I can teach it again in 2016. Because it's coming up, I think, because sometimes I don't even think about Tonglen anymore. Because I'm through that period of very emotional life. I've been teaching now. I don't get that crazy anymore like I used to. So I don't do it. But as soon as my health issues arose, right away, that's what I did. I just switched my practice to Tonglen, and it took care of the problem, kind of. I know what I have to do when I'm upset about my health. So in a Tonglen, there's a little something you put on following the breath. And again, I would say this is a bit of a harder practice. So if you're new, I wouldn't recommend starting with Tonglen. Although some people do because they get it right away. But on your inhale, you breathe in the suffering like black smoke. There's an image. You penetrate the suffering until it breaks your heart broken. With a broken heart, Buddha shines out, Buddha's heart. And on your exhale, you send out kindness, non-thought, emptiness, interdependence, anything that might help the situation. So it's a breath practice, right? But it's a hard one. And it's opposite to what we usually want to do. What we usually want to do is what the New Age breath is. And I'm not putting it down, I'm just saying it's the opposite of a New Age breath. The New Age breath is you bring in the fresh energy of the universe and you exhale out the toxicity of yourself, right? So that's very understandable. Breathing in the good part and letting out the negative part. But Tonglen is the reverse. You breathe in the negative and you send out the positive or joyful part. So that in itself breaks down your egocentricity, because you're going against what the ego wants to do. So that in itself. But also, for me, it's the Four Noble Truths condensed into one breath. Dukkha exists in our life and it's caused by our self-centeredness, and the poisons are everywhere. Greed, anger, and ignorance is everywhere. So on my in-breath, I'm just stating that again. And on my out-breath is the third and fourth noble truth, which is there is a reversal of that. You can be free of that. You can feel unconditional love. You can let go of your desire system. You can let go of your desire to be healthy all the time, just bringing it back to my situation. And the thing about Chonglen is, it's good to, again, this goes back to my theme. You have to be kind of practicing Chonglen in meditation for you to be familiar enough with it, so when the emergency comes up, you're right there. So you need to practice. And also, it takes a while to get it. When my parents died, which was over 20 years ago, I was just learning Tonglen. So I went to my father's funeral. I have a difficult relationship with my family to this day, although it's much better. And I just said, okay, you're going to do a Sishin. So this is why I think of it as a Sishin. I said, the moment you get off the plane, until you get home, you are in Sishin. And you have to be concentrated, and this is your practice. But I hadn't practiced very much. So I had no idea what an out-breath was. Really, I wasn't familiar with unconditional love. I hadn't been doing loving kindness. So my out-breath and what I saw by doing it was that my out-breath was always judgmental. I would take the pain in, but I couldn't do, I just wasn't practiced enough to do the out-breath. So I worked for quite a long time on the Divine Abode's loving kindness and Tonglen to be able to understand what is freedom, what is loving, what is not judging the other person, but just caring for the other person? So it took me quite a while to learn how to do that. And now, when I enter an emergency, that's my go-to practice. So, for example, when I'm at the hospital, I just do it. I just say, oh my God, I don't want to sit in the waiting room of the nuclear medicine waiting room for 45 minutes until they call my name. I don't want to do this. There's a song, I don't want to do that, that my sons always sing. I don't want to do that. So I say, okay, you don't want to do that. So that's my desire system and my ego saying, I'm out of here. And there's no out of here, though, right? You have to wait. So what do you do? You know, you read People magazine over and over and over, you know, to wait. So you do Tonglen. And boy, when you're in the hospital, there's a lot of Tonglen to do. And that's going down to extending the Tonglen, which actually, I think, is the part of the practice that's the most powerful for me. So when you first, in Tonglen practice, you start with your own pain. Maybe you go out and start with someone else's pain, your son or your mother or someone at work. You do it for them. And then you extend the tonglen, which means, so I'm sitting in the waiting room, and I know, pretty much know, that everyone who's going through this is as upset or nervous as me, and some of them more, because they have a life-threatening illness. So I do the tonglen for the whole waiting room, including myself. Breathing out. Really, it's something to do. And it makes you happy, actually. You're supposed to end up, after doing tonglen, neutral. That the out-breath balances the in-breath. And now, this idea of extending the pain, I do almost all the time, almost every day, when I find myself nervous about giving a talk. Then I say, how many ministers are nervous about giving their Sunday talk? And I say, oh, 40,000. Just in the United States. And so then I say, oh, okay, well, let's all of us relax. Breathe in. And do you get what I just extended the tonglen. Another wonderful example, which is also far away, was I nursed my children, which means that I had to get up in the middle of the night. My husband couldn't do it. And at first I was resentful, especially if I had to get up twice, you know. So, again, this was 20 years ago, just when I was starting to learn how to extend the tonglen. So I just said, okay, I'm going to meditate while I'm nursing, and I'm going to do tonglen. And I started nursing about why do I have to get up in the middle of the night? That was the first in-breath, you know. And then I started to extend the tonglen, and I realized that there were three other women on my block in South Minneapolis who had children, and they were up in the middle of the night. And I knew because their lights were on the second floor, you know. And then I started saying, oh my God, there's maybe millions of women, not only in the present moment, but all since humans began, that were up in the middle of the night. And all of a sudden, the whole situation with my child changed. And it became actually my favorite thing. Was in the middle of the night, it was so quiet, and the babies are so beautiful, if you're not saying, why do I have to get up? Right? They're just so beautiful. And I felt like I was in communion with women beginningless time. And it lightened my heart, and I did not feel resentful at my situation. So that's another story about the power of extending the tonglen or extending your prayer. And if you've studied love and kindness, you know there are these steps. And at the end, you're extending it to large groups of people. So that's the same as extending the tonglen. The other thing, the divine abode phrases, as many of you know if you've been with me for a while listening, I use phrases a lot. I use Lojan slogans and divine abode phrases because they're a soundbite that can happen quickly, and especially if you've been using them or have memorized them, they come up fast, kind of. Like, may I be at peace with the ups and downs of my life. That's an equanimity phrase, and it comes up quickly because I've used it so much. Or with my children, now my second son, who's 20 years old, just came home for the summer. So I thought, oh, I got to get that slogan, that phrase. I can send you love, I can pray for you, but I can't make your decisions. I can't make decisions for you. You are the owner of your own karma. I can care about you, but I can't make decisions. That's one of the phrases. Well, boy, if you have older kids, that's a fabulous phrase. You just say that phrase and it gives me direction. Like, keep your mouth shut, which I think mothers of 20-somethings need to do. Keep your mouth shut. You can't tell them what to do. And if you do, you're in for it. You know, they'll get mad at you. Or they'll do the opposite sometimes. Unless they've asked, you know, there's certain situations where you can say something to your children. But as a Jewish mother, I have to shut my mouth, mostly. I have to be quiet. And the way I do that is I use a phrase. Or I use Tonglen. I've said some of these before, but I used to, when my son was in high school, and before he started to drive, I would pick him up at school to come home. And this particular son is what I call a negative reporter. He never says, oh, school was great, and I love my teachers, and I had a great time with my friends. He would never say that. He always says he hates everything, you know. Even when he was in kindergarten, he said that. Now he says it, so I'm used to it. But I used to engage with that, and kind of we would have a fight almost every time I drove him home. And it didn't feel good, and it alienated us from each other. So I said, so this is another example of interrupting my mind. When I noticed I was getting into that place of fighting with him, I would say that sentence, I can love you, but I can't make your decisions for you. You're the owner of your own karma. And I zip up my mouth and I do Tonglen. And we wouldn't have a talk, but he would have his phones on anyway by that time. But I had something to practice, to do, actively do for my spiritual life on the 20-minute ride home. And when he took off his earphones, I was in a different place. And it was better for my parenting that I was in a different place. Sometimes when I, in an ordinary day, when I'm not feeling good, like I feel like I'm upset about something or I'm not able to concentrate or I don't have a peaceful heart at all, I'll stop and I have a lot of pages of phrases, which I've handed out often, and I find two phrases or three phrases that fit, or the Lojong slogans too, that fit with how I'm feeling. And I'll do those phrases. Sometimes even if I only do them for 5 or 10 minutes, it changes my psychological chemistry. And I can go back into my life from a different place in myself. And I often write them down on index cards. So in 2 hours, when I'm back in the same futzy place, thinking about some problem I'm having, I can whip out my very hand-chosen phrases and calm myself down and then begin again. And I believe that that is what a practice looks like. I don't think you ever get to a stage where the whole day is maybe once in a lovely while, the whole day is coming from my Buddha eyes. Often late in a longer session, I can hold the space of the Buddha for longer than I can in the activity of my day. But these practices that I've been cultivating, it's why Dogen says practice realization instead of enlightenment. Because actually, if you do a practice, you are enlightened. In that moment, you've liberated the story. So that's how I feel. And I think if you do it, this is my gesture for the mind's muscle working. If you strengthen your mind's muscle, you can change how you're reacting to your life. So it's 10:30. Does someone want to just say something or ask a question? We'll take a few minutes. Yes.
So when you're doing Tonglen then, do you, you're focusing just on what you're, so for instance with you and your son, and you're feeling frustrated because he's not seeing your view, but you're seeing him suffer in this negativity. Do you think, so you're breathing in the frustrations of other mothers who are not getting through to their sons, or are you trying to breathe in like his negativity and his feelings and what he's going through to try to breathe out comfort for him? Or
okay, so I probably would do all three, especially because I had 20 minutes and he wasn't talking. So the first thing I do is I do it for myself. I recognize that I'm frustrated, I'm hurt, I'm afraid for my kid. And I do it a little bit for that, doing it for myself. Then I would probably do it for him. And just to take in the suffering of your child is very hard. To acknowledge it, to not be in denial, and that he's a human being. And to send him love. But that's very, if you know how to send love, it's very happy to send people love. And then I would end by doing it for all the mothers who are driving their kids home and in the same situation as me. And I might also do it for all teenagers who are having trouble at school.
So it's okay to take on their feeling, even though that, like, you're not feeling exactly what he's feeling. That's not creating more.
Right. So again, I'm going to just say, Tonglen is a somewhat sophisticated meditation practice. And if you want to do it, you should get a teacher to help you learn how to do it. But basically what I do is I try to understand and open up to my son's suffering. And I take his suffering in as if it were my own. And then I send him love back, or peace, or non-reactivity, or emptiness, or whatever. So that's how I do it.
It's really tricky, isn't it, in terms of not sort of becoming codependently attached
to the yeah.
That's pretty sophisticated.
It is sophisticated, but I think you can learn how to do it.
Right.
Yeah. And if whenever I'm codependent, I go back to the line, I can care about your suffering, I can do a few things, but I cannot change your karma. Your decisions are your own. That kind of cuts it, doesn't it? When I do that, I'm cutting my codependent. I'm really working on that is not my problem. That's his problem. And there was one more. Did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, since you were talking about guardian statues, for anybody who hasn't seen them yet, we have two small guardian statues in the entryway of the building here as you come in past the front doors. If you look in the glass cabinet on your left, there's a scroll with the incel on it and two delightful little guardian statues on either side. So we have that going for us here.
And there was one more person. Oh, yes.
I just wanted to say it is a very high level practice, and the teacher is really important. I have a good friend who is really practicing Tonglen very rigorously and became really ill, and I would just caution people to find a teacher and really discover what it's about before you mm-hmm. dive into a deep practice of Tonglen.
Right, and also if you're already depressed, sometimes it's not the right practice. Sometimes you should work on loving kindness for 5 years before you start in-breath practice. So again, I didn't even want to bring it up because you can't learn it in a lecture. On the other hand, many of my students have learned it. And also, it's one of my, when I'm in an emergency, that is the practice I do. Okay, thank you very much.
May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless. I bow to freedom. Delusions are inexhaustible. I bow to mend them. Dharma gates are boundless. I bow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I bow to realize it. Beings are I bow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I bow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable. I bow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I bow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible.